There we are. Hello, Mr. Rowan. How are you today?
Well, you know, I'm doing all right. I'm kind of on a whirlwind spring tour. I started out in Florida, then in Kentucky with a Jerry Garcia exhibition at the Bluegrass Hall of Fame Museum, and then I went to Ireland.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
And I got back here just a little while ago, so.
Well, welcome back to Kauai.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
I'm sitting here with our resident flat picker, Lex White, and I think he had some interesting musical questions to ask you.
Oh, sure. I certainly do. Well, Mr. Rowan, I don't know if you recall, but I've met you before, once at Grass Valley in California. You played with Railroad Earth, Grass Valley, California, and I was a young man, young flat picking guitar player, and you were a very kind and compassionate, generous person. You made an impact on me in that way. But I wanted to, for our listeners, would you grace us with a, what was your favorite story of you working with Bill Monroe?
Well, that would be hard to say. He was a very focused person. You know, he always said, "Pete, I've had to keep as much out of bluegrass as I put in it." And I thought that was maybe a warning, you know.
Wow.
Don't try and put too much into it, you know. He was very specific about his music. And Richard Green, who played fiddle at the time, when I was in the band, I got Richard in the band. I kind of created a little band of my favorite pickers because Bill was always using, you know, wonderful old standbys like Joe Stewart and part of the bluegrass family in the South there down in Nashville. But I was only 23 or so at the time, and I was looking for people my age to get in the band. It's sort of a natural progression. And when Richard Green finally joined, he in the interview, he said something that I would ascribe to as a definitive way of looking at Bill Monroe. He said, "Bill Monroe provided you with a truth that you could always go to that truth." And it was his way of feeling his music.
Mm.
And, you know, the music is a truth.
The ancient tones.
Yeah. But the more mystical stuff comes out from the truth. And the truth being, sort of, it's indefinable essence of the timing and the tones. And but what Richard said that really struck me was he never found it again after Bill Monroe. And
wow.
we were all into discovering your own truth at the time, right? That was the deal.
Yeah.
You know, John Coltrane, Miles Davis, discovering your truth. They were our heroes, and Bill too, because he discovered his truth. But to have that kind of solid leadership, and Bill was a master of the silent leadership, you know. If he didn't like something going on, he'd just break a string and leave the stage. That'd be it. And there goes the anchor. The anchor would walk away.
Wow.
He wouldn't just say, "Now, boys, follow me." You know, he might say something as the time, you know, as the song started up. "Come on now, boys, you know, like, get with it now." And the thing about bluegrass is something I've never even been able to comprehend is this sense of forward time.
Yeah.
So it doesn't really jump the front beat, but it does something.
It rides the beat in an interesting, that's very true, and I've had trouble describing it myself. like how exactly bluegrass sits on the beat differently than other music.
I just think it's like a horse that's, you know, trained to run. It doesn't run in the middle of the beat. It's always pushing on. You know, the beat kind of follows it. I think maybe that's a way of saying it.
Hmm.
The beat kind of follows that lightning-like approach that the bluegrass timing has.
Would you say that the timing is...
So, I mean, that's about what I can think of right now. I got to go do a sound check at the pavilion here and doing an opening set and then playing some with leftover salmon today.
Yeah, that's...
I'm happy to answer any questions. Go ahead.
Oh, well, I did have... I had a question. Well, I really... One of my favorite albums of all time, actually, is the album High Lonesome Cowboy that you did with Don Edwards.
Yeah.
And can you tell me a little bit about what was the process of getting that album together, and what did you... Maybe you know the story. What's the origin of Goodbye Old Paint? I just played it on the air just before you called in.
That's from that song was discovered by Alan Lomax down in Texas from the singing of, I believe, a black cowboy. And it's just the most mystical song to me. You know, I mean, when songs are imbued with that much authenticity and singing, the singing, of course, it takes you to another place. And part of the inspiration for all of that was the existence of the Irish melody and the famine that in Ireland that drove so many people to America, where, you know, a plowboy could become a cowboy. That's basically the thing, you know.
Yeah.
Or you could join the cavalry and get a rifle and a saber and boots and saddle and a horse. Man, that's not something that was available to most kids over in Europe at the time. Most
that's
poor
true.
Kids.
Wow.
You know, and so the idea is there's this mythical guy, and he's, you know, he's singing all these melodies in the Irish tradition, and his spirit comes to America, and he finds himself as a cowboy. You know, he can rope, he has a skill. It's not just a farmhand with a stick herding cattle down the lane at the end of the day, you know. He's a full-fledged gentleman of the horse, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, that was the idea. And it's endless, you know. There could have been volume 15, because there's so much material there. But that was the inspiration. We would sit around for hours. Don had me and Tony Rice and Brynn and I think Billy Bright play on some of his recordings, and that led to this one. And the people over there what was the name of that label? Anyway, over there in Colorado Springs, Don's label, they were so nice to me, you know, and they were up and running at the time. Now things are, you know, gone more digital, but it was wonderful to work with those people.
Absolutely.
See, Mr. Rowan, I was wondering, what would you have done if you hadn't gone into the music entertainment business?
I suppose I would have been a painter.
A painter?
Yeah, my mom was a painter, so...
Do you do any painting now?
I do. I do as much as I can, yeah.
That's awesome.
That's great.
Well, you know, painting is so wonderful because... You know, you can have different sort of palettes. You can have palettes of, you know, highly chemicalized modern paints. And then what I like, what I've been into is I have a palette of about 8 different earth colors that have been collected by these people. They're called Rublev, Rublev. They're in Northern California, and they come from the Russian icon iconic religious painting tradition. For the purity, that's mostly egg tempera, you know, as a medium.
Yeah.
But they use very simple and pristine and beautiful colors, and it's made me kind of keep interested in doing it. However, in Ireland, I picked up in Nashville. I didn't bring my stuff with me, you know, and I went to the store and I picked up, you know, 7 or 8 of these sort of more influenced by purples and violets, which is more vibrant versions of some of the old earth tones, you know. So it was kind of like, okay, now this is what I got to study. So I got a little notebook and I did my little swatches, and you know, and to me, I see painting as a challenge to discover a sort of an ancient language, you know.
Yeah,
it was at the tip of sticks stuck in, you know, mud, and you know, and marks on walls, petroglyphs, and stuff like that. You know,
in many ways, music is the same kind of thing. Music is an ancient language, and I appreciate one thing that I like about your music, and one song in particular, "Across the Rolling Hills," Padmasambhava.
Oh yeah, yeah.
Is that it touches on a spirituality that is vaster than the traditional things that you would hear in bluegrass music, which is very Christian centered, but it has an openness of heart. To having that compassionate, the idea of the compassionate bodhisattva and the
true. And I'm finding right now that all these old blues tunes that I've been incorporating into my set, you know, like "Motherless Children Have a Hard Time," or "12 Gates to the City," songs I learned when I was learning to play guitar from like people like Odetta. You know, "Ain't No Grave Gonna Hold My Body Down."
Yeah.
Wonderful songs of intense spiritual, you know, confidence and yearning at the same time, you know. And really, you know, Carter Stanley was a master of writing the, you know, gospel blues kind of thing, you know. I mean, the "White Dove" that Jerry chose in Old Men Away is a great example of Carter's writing, you know. A very honest, I walked out to the graveyard, you know. And that comes from one of Bill Monroe's songs that I do. And I'll just leave you with this. That first song I learned of Bill's was called "The Old Kentucky Shore."
The Old Kentucky Shore.
Yeah, you know, and it just was a duet that was... Actually, it's not what Bill wanted to be singing at that time in his life. It was something he had done earlier in the Jimmy Martin period. But I just thought that these high notes and harmonies, it led directly to the Waltz of Time. Oh. You know, that kind of really lonesome kind of bluesy duet singing.
I appreciated that you wrote... did you write the song "Ruby Ridge"?
Yes, I did. Yeah,
and I appreciated that you wrote that because that was such a tragic incident.
You know, Sugar Hill didn't want to put it out.
Yeah,
I wanted it to be the kickoff tune of the record, and they were like, no, man, that's going to attract the right wing, the worst of the right wing people. And I don't think it was... I was looking at it from the point of view of humanity, you know?
Yeah.
This guy was hunted down like a dog, and who, you know, nobody even today knows what happened, but the guy who killed him is in jail.
Yeah.
I believe, but see, this is all news that goes away. It was just the idea that... Yeah, it's an edgy song. It's on the wrong side of... It's on the wrong side of reality, but the right side of history. Yeah, this is a hard thing, you know, how to grapple with the moral dilemmas right through music. It, ultimately, music can be used in many ways, but it's such a pure thing. And I think that's what, I'll leave you with a quote from Bill Monroe. He said, you've got to love the music and make the audience love the music like you love it.
That's
and
true.
He said, yeah, that, and he said, and when it's right, you feel like you're flying.
That's wow.
So true.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we, you know, this is the beauty of it, right? I better go do my sound check.
Okay.
Hey, well, thank you very much, sir, for your time.
Anytime, man. Anytime, any place.
It was a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you very much, Peter.
And I hope to pick with you one day soon.
We'll get on the beat. All right.
All right, brother.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Well, we talked to Peter Owen. I feel like a new person, a different level of humanity, you know?
Yeah, well, that was pretty cool.
I met him first when he was playing, he was rehearsing with C-Train.
Oh, yeah?
Back in Marblehead, Massachusetts.
Wow.
It was upstairs in some sail factory, nautical environment, and I just got to hear him practice a little bit. I think they were playing a song called Did You See the Moon Last Night? Hung like a Chinese ball.
Oh.
Very cool.
Oh.
I can think that was after Bill Monroe.
I see.
I think. Anyway, thank you so much for helping with that, Lex. That was really, really interesting, and you had some great questions.
Yeah, no problem.
Here's a song from the old and in the way, folks. Midnight Moonlight. On KKCR, your Kauai Community Radio Station.